Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
It's going fantastic.
Really so fantastic, super-dee-duper-dee. It is warm weather out there right now, sort of.
It's going to drop. It's going to get colder.
It was raining. So all that snow is disappearing.
It is. The snow, I noticed in your neighborhood, too. I'm surprised you haven't shoveled out the curb, because I have to park 4 feet from the curb because there's so much snow. But it's I find it very frustrating, too, because even in my neighborhood, where I live, it's pretty jam-packed. A lot of homes, mm-hmm. a lot of people with, like, 3-4 cars. So a lot of people do park on the street. And if you park on the street currently, you can't park across the road from another car.
No.
Because the school buses can't get by. And
delivery school vans, for chumps.
Delivery vans can't get by. And as it is, like the other day I was going through, and there's two giant pickup trucks parked right across from each other. And I had to go so slow.
But like, that's dumb any day of the week.
Their mirrors passed above my mirrors, but it was pretty tight.
Yeah.
But no, not every, like, we have a wide street where I live. It's a wide street, but when you have 3 to 4 feet of snow, because the snow plows don't go right to the curb, so the streets are smaller, and people just don't get that.
Yeah.
It's like, you can't, like, I wish people could just park on the same side of the street.
But that's, like, across the main drag from us is a soccer field.
Yep.
And people will come and park on our street and then walk across the main drag.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they'll park right across from the end of my driveway.
Oh, makes it tight to get in and out.
I'm like, why would you park there?
Yeah.
Like, a little bit of intelligence might not be so bad to incorporate into your lifestyle.
People are not smart.
Oh. Yeah, there's days where I look at people and just, well, I saw one guy do it, and I'm like, why would you park at the end of my driveway? Well, because it's close and I can just walk. I said, well, when you get back, if there's a giant scratch down the side of your car, it wasn't me. He moved his car.
Anyways, yes, the snow is melting, but there is a polar vortex approaching. And so, we're going to have some very cold temperatures in the next week and a half or so.
Yeah.
And there's a lot. So the concern is now, well, specifically, I don't care about anybody else. I'm thinking about me.
I don't care about the rest of you. It's all about me.
But the concern right now is with the polar vortex, they're expecting to get a mix of snow and rain. Mm-hmm. And with the ground frozen, rain don't get sucked up. So they're expecting flooding.
Yeah.
Because we're going to get a combination of heavy rains and heavy snow over the next little while.
Well, the one sewer grate is right at the end of our neighbor's driveway. So I know it's open. There's one across the road from us and just down a little bit, and I know for a fact that one's open because I saw it the other day. Mm-hmm. There's one on our street right across from it. That one's still covered by snow.
Mm-hmm. But with the warmer temperatures, it might be you're going to have a quarter-inch gap between the snow and the pavement. So because
there's definitely you can see that where the water.
Yeah.
But I should realistically go in. And would you like me to clean out my, would you like me to dig you a spot to park?
That's fine. I've been parking on the snowbank.
So is our neighbors. The parents come to visit and they park on the snowbank too.
My car's at an angle right now.
But there is, right where you park,
if
you notice, there's a nice shelf shoveled out.
Yes, it looked like somebody's, where they open a door or something on their vehicle.
No.
Well, that's your recycling garbage.
That's my garbage.
That's your garbage shelf.
Yeah. So, and it's right at the perfect height for the garbage man just to grab it and dump it into the garbage truck.
There you go.
See? It's all about consideration for the working man.
Yes, exactly.
Because that's the kind of guy I is. Always thinking about others.
There you go.
Unlike you, who it's all about you.
I'm very selfish.
Hot diggity dog.
So you, me. You're just back from...
If you haven't watched Graham Norton...
you.
Okay, so you.
Love that show.
Love Graham Norton.
Yeah.
But I am back from Michigan.
QAS.
The Quiet Adventure Symposium.
Mm-hmm.
Went down that. The 30th year.
Really?
Yep. This was the year 30.
Huh.
So started in 95, I guess.
Too bad I missed it.
Yeah. You had family issues to take
care of. I had family
issues
to attend to, yes.
Yeah. Went down there, Kevin Callan and I drove down, and I don't want to get political or anything like that or negative, but there was a lot of people saying we should be boycotting these shows.
Yeah.
Yes and no. My take on it is, and I can only speak for myself, I know Kevin has his same, similar sort of things. In 4 years, people are going to remember that we didn't come down.
Yeah.
And we have American listeners that go to these shows just so they can see, because it's the only time they get to see us and talk to us.
Yeah.
You know, and I had people this weekend coming up to the booth going, on this show, you talked about this and this.
Yeah.
So it's nice that they can have that conversation.
And so it's a personal connection. It's not like it's a business connection, or it's not like we have money off this.
No. So, I'm not down there buying.
Yeah.
Hitting Walmarts and Myers and all
this
these other things.
It's about paddlers talking
to the
paddlers.
Community.
Which I think kind of sits outside the lines, the normal lines. Like, you're not going down spending thousands on a vacation. You're down there to meet people.
You know what? Like, my thought process is, and I do think differently than a lot of people at times.
I agree.
But if I stayed home every time there was a political, religious,
you'd never go anywhere.
Gender, sexual preference issue,
mm-hmm.
those seem to be the big four, I would never leave the house.
Yeah.
No one would ever leave the house. So, you know what? We headed across the border. We were a bit concerned about what would happen when we got to the border. Was my only concern.
Yeah.
You know, some people, what about people going to be angry down there? And the Americans are going to be all ticked off and angry at the Canadians for coming down.
We're going to expect that vehicle.
Oh, my God. We had more apologies all weekend.
Yeah.
It was people are frankly embarrassed about what's going on.
Yeah.
Right? But regardless, we went down there, had a blast. There was a long lineup at the border going across. Because they only had like two booths open.
No.
So, but once we got up there, said where we were going, what we were doing, and have a nice trip, drive safe, and off we went. Totally forgot about White Castle.
Oh, yeah.
Totally forgot. Because there's usually a sign on the highway,
yeah,
right?
If I had been with you, I would have reminded you.
Yeah, way to go, buddy. Could have phoned me. coming back, we pulled right in. Where were you? Here we go. Okay. Drive safe. Like
that's
30 seconds through the border. So there was no concerns. There were concerns by some Americans saying, you know, like if we're supposed to be coming up for trips and are we going to get a hard time? Is somebody going to trash our car while we're up there? And
I don't think so.
Well, that's what even Kevin, because Kevin addressed that topic with a lady that was asking. She says, I'm supposed to do a trip on Lake Superior.
Yeah.
And he says, no, that's not going to happen. I mean,
it's not about
it could
people.
Happen at any time to anybody, even a Canadian, somebody trashes your car.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people let tires out of my truck.
Let tires out of your truck?
Or air out of my truck tires, Yeah, they let the tires out. I took all the time to put those tires in that truck, and then they let them out all willy-nilly.
They had leashes on them.
Yeah. They let the air out of my tires. It could happen to anybody.
Yeah.
Anywhere sort of deal, but people aren't going to, you know, you hope they're not, but they're not just going to, oh, there's an American car or license plates. We're just going to go trash
it. It's not an American people issue.
Yeah.
It's not the
people. Yeah. You know what? And that's it. It's not all the people that are doing it.
It's the government.
So yeah, he had a number of people sitting there listening to this conversation going, and he says, if they were going to trash your car, they would have done it by now.
Mm-hmm.
They would have trashed it ages ago. Yeah, like they wouldn't be waiting for an excuse sort of thing. So I think they're more wary about coming up here than we are of going down there right now.
Canadians are mad.
Oh, dude, when the Quebecers are flying the flag, you know you've pissed off a country. When the people in Quebec are waving the Canadian flag, you've done it now. But it was a good weekend down there. I mean, there were some politics that happened, you know, talked about. There is absolutely no getting away from it, but
well, I
was to a minimum. And
I saw Kevin Callan's video, as I always watch them.
Yep.
And so there was the rabbits. I was excited to see the rabbits because I'm always happy to see the rabbits when I go down. So he had somebody brought rabbits to his booth down there at the QAS.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. Lots to see. Unfortunately, I didn't get to see any of the show, really. I did a quick walk to a couple of spots.
It gets busy.
Yeah. But they had, I keep forgetting who they are. I want to say they were the Michigan Trail Riders, Horse Trail Riders Association, or something like
they
that.
They had some horses there or something.
So they had a couple of horses there to show, you know, here's etiquette you use when you're on trails and stuff like that. I just saw the horses, but I didn't actually get to go watch them do their thing. There's some boats and paddle making. The mustache paddles were back.
Oh, nice.
Yep, he was back again and stuff. There's regular ones that are always there. Mm-hmm. Conservation groups, bikes, hiking, paddling of all types, that sort of stuff. Books, like I said, conservation area groups and whatnot. So there's a lot of info to see there. It's a nice day out, that's for sure. Had a blast. Met up with a lot of people that we haven't seen since last year. A lot of new people that we've never met that listen to the podcast and stuff. And as every year, there's a bunch of people that stop by and say, so who are you guys? What do you do? Mm-hmm. And whatnot. We just say, oh, here's what we do. 470 plus episodes over 9 years, every Thursday, new episode, all types of paddling and even some weird stuff that, you know, goes on when you talk about that sort of deal. So,
Shenanigans.
And our neighbors, our neighbor on one side was Trapper Haskins. Him and his wife paddled a yawl.
What's a yawl?
It's a rowboat.
What's up, y'all?
You know what? And I'll say it. I actually did an interview with him, which will be, I think, next week's show. Is it next week's or the week after? I got enough for three shows. Mm-hmm. I did enough recordings for three shows.
Excellent.
So this week, next week, and the following week are all going to be Quiet Adventure Symposium. So, I was talking to him, and he kept talking about y'all. And he's from, they live in Nashville.
Okay, yep.
And so, hey, y'all.
That tracks. Right?
And then he said, yeah, we took the y'all.
Wait, which y'all are you talking about?
Y'all? Do y'all take the y'all? So then I finally clued in, because, you know, it was early, so shut up. I finally, a y'all. It's a East Coast type rowboat.
Y-A-W-L?
Yeah. Y-A-W-L.
So I knew how to spell it.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's like, okay.
So it's not a Y-A-L-L. It's a Y-A-W-L.
So, yeah. There's not Y apostrophe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, chit-chatted with him about that sort of thing. They were on the one side of us. He wrote a book about their trip. And like I said, it's very interesting. It wasn't just a straightforward journey, which is pretty cool about this thing. I had Cliff Jacobson behind me, and this is the last Quiet Adventure Symposium. He's not doing his farewell tour.
Yeah,
he's like 84 now. Yeah, and these are getting longer.
It's
gonna
be tougher for him.
Wears him out easier and stuff. He's at Canucopia next week, and I think that's the very last show he'll be doing.
Mm-hmm.
His Canucopia, so it's his farewell.
Yeah,
thingy. So if you want to see Cliff Jacobson one last time,
gotta go.
You better be Canucopia next weekend. Sorry, this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And to see him there. So, great guy. He's inspired so many people to get out on the water and paddle. And as they say, there's the right way, the wrong way, and the Cliff Jacobson way. But I mean, everybody's got their own little, no, I do it this way. I don't care what the rest of the world does. Mm-hmm. I do this. Right. So, whatever works for you. So, yeah, he's you know, inspired so many people to get out there and paddle and just get in the great outdoors and stuff. So Cliff will definitely be missed. There was lots of...
he'll still be around. He just won't be doing the talks.
He won't be doing... Well, he says he might not even make it to the shows just because it's like a 12-hour drive.
Where does he live?
Down south somewhere.
Down south somewhere, y'all.
Somewhere. Yeah, I'm not sure where. And then Kevin Callan was behind me as well, selling his books, and always gets the lineup. You know, people want to come and see him. And then next to me was Kayak Coffee.
Mm, yes.
I could smell their coffee, and they were busy.
Yeah.
And I had one of their dark roast coffees.
Hmm.
Really good. So I went to buy a bag.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. sold out.
Oh.
Yeah. They sold out everything.
Wow.
Yeah. They just had, you know, those silver things you see in stores and the hotel. You get your little cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. You press a little black thingy and the coffee pours out. And
yeah.
They had those with coffee, but that was, yeah.
Hmm. Guess they need to bring more beans to the show.
Guess they need to, yeah.
Next year.
So, like I say, saw a lot of people, and there was a lot of good things there. And there was giant mouse.
A giant mouse?
It's called giant mouse. They make knives.
Oh.
All different types of knives.
Giant for a mouse or just giant knives?
All different size my knives. I don't know the reason it's called giant mouse, but all I saw was this big sign with this big logo, giant mouse, and I went over to see what it was, and it was knives. Okay, I'm not going to argue with you guys. So it was a quick, you know, run over, grab somebody, and come on, we want to chat with you about this. I want to chat with you about that. I want to chat with you about this, and do. And then somebody was called sick and had to cancel. So Cynthia Donovan, the president, and
did she know you already had a talk prepped?
Yes. Yeah, she knew we had it. I had it put it at the Toronto show. Yeah.
Okay.
So she'd contact me beforehand saying, listen, somebody's had to cancel. We have an hour spot.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be able to do your talk?
Yeah.
And she says it'll, you know, it's not a big room, but it'll be filled with nice, friendly people. And to which I told you.
I remember this conversation.
Said, no, I'm going to tell her no, because I only like to present in front of hostile people.
I only know how to deal with a hostile crowd.
Yeah. Sorry, a friendly crowd? No. If they're hostile, I'll talk in front of them. But if they're friendly, count me right out. So I did that as well. I did my presentation there, and people seemed to enjoy it. So, yeah. So it was a busy day.
Yeah.
It was a really busy day. You were missed by one and all.
Excellent.
Not by me, but you know, by others.
Yes.
No, there was a bunch of people there looking for you, and I said, he slacked out on me here. Yeah. So
slacker.
I might be having to look for, you know, another co-host because, you know. Nah, you know what? It was rough. You were definitely missed. Got through it all though, and had a good time. Met with a bunch of people, and by the time I got back Sunday afternoon, I was wiped.
I can imagine. Well, weekends like this, when it's the drive, the packing, unpacking, the packing up, and all that. And I think
it doesn't end when the show's done too, right?
Because
there's the after party
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly. It's the conversations, the mental part of it, right?
Yeah.
I always find that physical activity doesn't really tire me out as much as when you're doing active thinking and talking and and conversational stuff, like constantly.
Well, you know, and you're talking about paddling all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then people are talking about trips and stuff, and you're like, ooh, that sounds pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And then you're trying to remember, okay, I got to remember that place they were talking about.
Yeah.
So I can write that down or look at it later and You know, oh, that tip and trick. Oh, no. And then they want to ask something, and you're saying, now, how did I do that? Oh, here, you want to try this sort of thing and pass that information on. And so, yeah. And because you're, like you say, we go down so that we can interview people.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also the people that walk up that listen to our podcast and stuff
exactly.
like that want to chit chat as well. And you're just like, you just, from the minute the door opens to the minute it closes and then, and afterwards, you know?
Yeah.
And like I say, in the evenings, a bunch of people get together and, you know, go to the restaurant or go to somebody's hotel room, and we all sit there and chit chat about different things and, you know, paddling related and whatnot. And it's just like, what do you mean it's midnight already? How did that happen? So it was good. It was good. Going to do it again next year, I'm sure. Like I say, as much as you want to do the, you know, or people are trying to convince you to do the whole boycott thing and whatnot. So you do you, Sailor Bob.
Mm-hmm.
You do you. I will do me. And like I say, I spent enough money to feed my face, and that was it. And I saw a ton of people and happy for seeing them. So, that being said, do you got anything to talk about this week?
No, just the fact that I missed out on QAS this year and I missed out on seeing the rabbits.
Mm-hmm.
Second year in a row.
Yep. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And did I tell you about going to the Eagle Monk afterwards?
I watched it in Mr. Callan's video.
You saw Kevin Callan's video.
Mm-hmm.
And
I never missed a single one.
And now you know the big secret.
Yes. I didn't know it was a secret.
It was a secret. The only one that didn't know was you. So when you go into the Eagle Monk restaurant,
yeah,
or the bar, the microbrewery.
It's very unique.
It is. The roof is covered with these mugs.
Yes.
I think we've done mugs. Pictures and watched Kevin Callan's The Happy Campers YouTube mm-hmm. videos for it. And there's all these mugs. There's always a number and a name on the bottom. And last year, my daughter convinced me
mm-hmm.
to buy two mugs.
And I just learned about that this year.
And you just learned about that this year because the whole thing was not to tell you so that this year when you walked in,
we would
go to the back and there was a mug on the wall yeah. with your name on it.
See, you spoiled it. You shouldn't have told me.
2,475, Paddling Adventures Radio, Sean. 2,476, Paddling Adventures Radio, Derek.
There you go.
So we walk in there.
I don't like that number. I want a different number.
Yeah. Too bad. Sucks to be you, buddy. You walk in there. You go up and you find your mug on the wall. They're all in numerical order. You yeah. grab your mug and you walk up and you put your mug down and they say, what do you want? And they fill it.
Do they know how many mugs there are?
Well, there's at least 2,476.
So, yeah, so there's, and the walls are full.
Yeah, they keep, when you buy your yeah. your mug,
your recorder,
they
the book.
Open a binder mm-hmm. and they write your name, your mm-hmm. email address, your number, nice. All that sort of stuff. So, yes, they do know
hmm.
all the people and the numbers yeah. and all that sort of stuff. So,
very cool.
But it's just unique. So, everybody walks in thinking, that's cool, that's cool, that's cool. And then I walk into the back room, there's my mug on the wall, and I walk up and they're like, you got a mug here? Yes, I do. And you have to wait till there's a space.
Yeah.
Right? You can't just go in, I want a mug and stick it on, because there's no room.
Sorry, no room. You got to wait till somebody dies.
You got to wait till someone dies or moves yeah. or what have you, right? And then, yeah, if there's space comes available, they get a couple mugs, and then you can buy them, mm-hmm. and that's your mug. Now, The thing that I like the best about this
mm-hmm.
is I went and grabbed my mug and I took it up to the front and they pull a piece of paper out that says first pint free. So I got my free beer. I also had to pay was for my, cause I had
how much was the mug?
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to tell you, but I think every time you buy a beer, you get a buck off.
Yeah.
Right. So when you go next year
yep.
and get your mug.
Yeah. My first drink will be free.
Your first one will be free.
And the next 20 will be a dollar off.
Right? So you say buy 20 beers, get two free.
Yeah. And do they brew their own?
Yeah.
Yeah, they brew their own too.
I had a caramel porter.
Oh, what was that? That sounds
I'm not
good.
A big caramel fan.
No.
But it sound, I'll give it
with a
word.
Dark beer, it's good.
It was really mm-hmm. good. It was really good.
It's yeah. like burnt umber taste, mm-hmm. earthy mm-hmm. undertones.
Yeah.
Mm.
So, anyway, so that was the Eagle Monk. So, if you're ever in East Lansing, Michigan, stop at yeah. the Eagle Monk. Check out all the mugs on the roof yeah. and the walls and then and have something to eat.
Find Sean's there. Mug and pee in it.
Yeah. Lick it. Anyway, at the end of the night, you take it up and go, what do I do with my mug? They say, we take it, we wash it, we sterilize it, we hang it back on the wall.
Nice.
And then when you get there to next year.
So it hangs on the wall with
dust and dirt
and
fingerprints and bugs and
yeah, all this spider in flakes it. And dust that comes off people. And
yep. Yep. Yep.
Did somebody puts an old. It? Did they rinse it before you
oh,
used
yeah.
it?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, no, you get what you get. Essence. Beer of essence.
There's a layer of dead skin to the bottom of my mug.
That's all that. Yeah, there's a spider in there. Awesome. Yes, they wash it first.
Yes. The spider's name is Frank.
Yep. Yep, it was good. Anywho, so we never have had, so the president right now is Cynthia Donovan.
Yes.
She's the one that puts it all Sorry. She doesn't put it all together. She makes everybody put it all together.
Yes.
She runs the whole thing, overwatches, keeps sure everything, makes sure everything's running as it should.
She's like the...
The queen bee.
The guy...
The queen.
She's the woman with the wand that runs the orchestra.
Oh, the conductor.
Yes.
That's it. She is the conductor of it all. Big thanks and a shout out to Cynthia and all the volunteers that make this thing happen. It seems to run without a hitch every year. Mm-hmm. Any hitches that we see anyway. There's always something behind the scenes that there's no one always knows about.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like just like we know from David, it's running these shows can be quite the headache.
Yes, even the best laid plans.
Mm-hmm.
But no, everything seemed to run really smoothly from where I was sitting. A good time was had by all. And everybody I chat with, and I'll ask, like, hey, how are you liking the show so far? And it's like, this is a good show.
Excellent.
Right? I think it's an underrated show. So
you guys need more sponsors.
Right? I decided, you know what? I got to get Cynthia to sit down here
and
say, hey, let's chat about this. What is the Quiet Adventure Symposium and all that sort of stuff? So that's what I did. And this is the interview I did with Cynthia Donovan from the Quiet Adventure Symposium. So we are here with Cynthia Donovan. How you doing?
I'm doing quite well, thank you.
You are like the main head cheese queen of the Quiet Adventure Symposium.
I guess you could call me that.
I just did.
They keep making me wear a bright pink hat so everybody can track me down.
And did I track you down today?
Yeah, you got me tracked. I
had people come out and find you.
Exactly.
Yeah, look for the big pink hat.
Yes.
So what is the Quiet Adventure Symposium?
Well, this, in 2025, we're celebrating the 30th year of Quiet Adventure Symposium. It started 30 years ago as a bunch of boat builders and paddlers getting together and having a quiet water symposium.
Okay.
And then we realized there's so many other non-motorized outdoor adventures, which are our mission, that we needed to include the bikers, the hikers, the fishermen, the horse trail riders, and all of these other activities in an event whose mission is basically to connect people, to connect across activities, to connect them to different people who have adventures in foreign countries, who have adventures out west, or have amazing adventures in Michigan. I got involved because I had moved to Michigan. I really didn't know Michigan was as gorgeous as it is.
Right.
And has as many rivers and lakes and everything else. And Ontario's right next door with gorgeous places. So I got involved in presenting initially because we have 30 presenters, all these exhibitors. It is a place, our mission is to connect people to their next adventure, to their next investment in the environment, how to get active in stewardship, how you can learn about invasive species and how you can do something about them if they're important to you. So it's a great way for people to join in, meet with people, and have some great conversations.
Well, you know, and that's one of the things we harp on this year sort of thing is the getting out in nature. Waterway stewardship.
Yep.
And I know there's conservation groups here and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then there are all types of different paddlers here.
Yeah.
And some of the, like you say, there's bikers and stuff like that. Yeah. I haven't seen any horses walk by, though.
Oh, they're out in the arena. There are two horses in the arena that are going to do training on how horse etiquette and trail etiquette when you're on one of those multi-use trails.
Right.
And you run across horses. What should you do?
What's screaming.
The best thing? And preferably not run and screaming. So you obviously need to go to that training, Sean.
Right? But yeah, there's all different types of things here. And as you say, it's all quiet stuff.
Yeah.
So no motors, no Nothing like that. Nothing loud.
No. Although the event itself is really loud.
The event is loud. And like I say, we're in our nice little tent here now. Yes. So it stops the big air conditioning above our heads from from noise. But I mean, you got kayaks, you got dragon boaters, you got conservation groups.
Yep.
You got authors with more types of books than you can shake a stick at.
Absolutely.
I know we talked to Trapper Haskins there about going down the Mississippi all that sort of stuff.
Yep.
The gear that you got here, paddles and stuff.
Yeah.
Mustache paddles. Like, he has some beautiful stuff.
Gorgeous. I just saw somebody walk by and he just bought him an old mustache paddle.
You didn't mug him?
No, because I'm sitting here. You got me tied with these headphones. I can't go out and mug. But those old mustache paddles, you just touch them and you stroke them and it's beautiful.
Yeah, he does some great work.
There's great artisan work.
Yeah. But there's so much of that stuff here different waterway trails and stuff like that. People help you plan trips all that. There's so much here. This is really cool. Yeah. And this is 30 years now.
This is 30 years. And it's brought in people from all over the region, including you Canadians, who are very welcome at this event. And then you have, people from Wisconsin, Ohio, Indiana is far away. I spend my summers in Minnesota, and I know I imported my sister from Minnesota to help. But I know people come. We've got Boundary Waters, canoe areas represented, for instance, and we've got some of the some great guides are here. And we've got Power of Water is one of our sponsors of our grand prize raffle. I went to Ireland with them and did sea kayaking, and I got to know them being here at this event.
Right.
Is how I met different outdoor guides, and got a chance to look at different boats, decided I'd rather not be underwater doing their whitewater kayaking, and shifted to sea kayaking. Because I saw the adventures here.
Yeah, I prefer to be on the water, not under.
Yeah, I was in my paddling class for whitewater. I was called the submarine queen because I had long hang time waiting for someone to come rescue me because I didn't have a role.
I can now hold my breath for 4 minutes.
Exactly.
Well, you know what? It's funny because I came down here because somebody told me about it. I said, well, I'm not doing anything this weekend. I came down for a day trip 2 years in a row. And then the third year, we're like, well, we were contacted and say, hey, why don't you like set up and record here?
Yeah.
I said, okay. So we came down and we've been coming, I think this is our fifth year doing this.
I think it is.
Yeah.
I think it is.
Doing this. And it's great to just sit here and, you know, chit chat with people about paddling and different things. And we talked about moose
The Isle Royale, the moose and wolf moose dynamics and, wolf and that history. It's fascinating history.
Yeah, talking about kayaking and all that sort of stuff and different paddling. And then you get music going on here now with Jerry Vandiver and Caitlin Evanson.
Yep.
And like Cliff Jacobson on his farewell tour.
I know. I got to get over there and see Cliff Jacobson in the next few minutes. So that's great.
And I'm presenting this year, too.
You're presenting. Exactly.
It's my second time presenting.
It is your second time. Exactly.
You know more about me than I know about me.
I just have to know the event inside out. You know, it's my role.
You know what? We love coming down here. We love seeing this. It may not be as big as a Canucopia thing.
No.
But you know what? There's enough here for a great day and get so much information. I'm looking forward to it continuing for many, many more years.
I hope so. I mean, that's the goal. When I came on board, Gary DeCock, who they've only had two other previous presidents in 30 years. They had Russ Hicks, who was there in the founding and helped organize it with Raup's Outfitters. And then Gary DeCock came on board, and, you know, I'm half the size of half the height of Gary DeCock.
I'm 6 feet tall, and I think I'm half his size.
Exactly. So when I took over, the goal was to figure out after COVID how to keep the symposium moving forward. But what was great about that timing is that's when people started doing a lot more outdoor, a lot more paddlers, and then a lot more investment in the environment, which is critical for us. We've got Michigan Waterway Stewards, if you haven't talked to them, would be great to talk to, because they've done a lot of investment getting communities together to get the waterways clean and great waterways to paddle on and to hike along and bike along.
Well, people take pride in it if they start
they
getting
do.
Into it, right?
They really yeah. do. And that's actually, we get so many volunteers. And the reason the volunteers come to the symposium is because they take pride in and joy in what the symposium gets them in terms of connecting and meeting people just like them.
Right.
Who want to be outdoors and don't want a motor between them and the outdoors.
Yeah. And coming here, they yeah. can ask the questions and
exactly.
find out what's, you know,
exactly.
do they want to go kayak or do they want to go canoe?
Exactly.
Right? Do they want to
exactly.
go way back country or they're more yeah. of a day tripper sort
yeah.
of thing? So it's
yeah.
nice to come here and
exactly.
and ask the questions
exactly.
and get the information.
Yep.
Well,
it's good.
You seem to be doing something right. It's
thanks, Sean.
Working out.
Aw, that's great. We love having you here, and I look forward next year to having Derek here with you.
Me too.
I wish him his best. we miss him, but
yeah,
it'll be great
you know.
To have the two of you. You can come alone if you need to. That's always welcome.
Yeah, my wife says I have to bring Derek with me when I can.
Oh, I think she's right.
We're not trying to say too much about Derek because then his head just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
And then he doesn't fit in the car.
Then he doesn't fit in the car anymore. Yeah.
yeah. And it's a long drive.
And I got to drive with Kevin Callen.
Yeah, that's always a joy.
Right?
You laugh a lot.
Yes. Thank you very much, Cynthia.
Thank you, Sean, for the opportunity. Yep. Take care.
You too. So it was nice to actually sit down and chat with Cynthia and hear what she had to say about the background and how this all started and whatnot. Again, big shout out to Cynthia and all the volunteers who
yes.
keep this thing going every year.
Yeah, it's all volunteer. It's all because mm-hmm. they enjoy it, they love it, whatever. So
yeah, so it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So after a chit-chat with Cynthia, behind me was Kevin Callen. Across from him was the Wolf Moose Foundation. And what they've been doing is researching the moose and the wolves and the balance they create together on
okay.
the Isle Royale.
That's a big island.
It is a big island. It's right in Lake Superior. So if you look at Lake Superior as a head, the wolf head, it's like where the eye is sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe I said that, I even point that out in the interview I do with Michael. Yeah, it was nice to hear some of the stuff that he was talking about. So I think you will like this interview for sure. So this is Michael George from the Wolf Moose Foundation. Joining us now is Michael George of the Moose Wolf Foundation. How you doing, Michael?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Just great. Yeah. Thanks for joining us here.
Pleasure.
So we know some people that have gone paddling. Now, when I grew up in school, and we've had this conversation on the podcast before, the Great Lakes, Lake Superior looks like the wolf head.
That's right.
Isle Royale is basically where the eye would be. Now, I know people that have been paddling there and stuff like that. We all do. Now, tell us about what you guys are doing there in regards to the moose and the wolf.
Okay, sure. Actually, we're part of a study that's been going on for 6.5 decades.
Yep.
And it is this a study of predator-prey relationships.
Okay.
So it's ongoing. The foundation helps to support that project financially and also promoting it educationally and the research, of course, that goes with that.
Right.
So it's, you know, in that respect, we're trying to help the study way into the future by funding it into the future. It's a little harder to get funding through different organizations nowadays, and the foundation was set up to try to accommodate that over the next, who knows, decade or two.
Right.
The project is the longest-running predator-prey study in the world, and that has played out on Isle Aurora since 1958. So it really, what we try to do again is bring, awareness to these relationships with the wolves and moose.
Okay.
And particularly try to dispel how people feel about wolves.
Right.
Because, you know,
that's the
you know,
big one.
Yeah, because it's sometimes there's fear involved and you know, a lot of them, I wonder, I want to see them, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So Isle Royale allows people to kind of step into that kind of an environment, and with the potential of maybe seeing a wolf. Not always happens that way, but occasionally just being living or hiking or paddling within that kind of an environment, and people, that brings them to the island a lot, just to say that they were living in this area for a week of backpacking or canoeing, and they were part of that environment.
You know, I've been paddling for over 30 years, and it doesn't matter how many wolves or how many moose I see, it's still a thrill just to see them. And I know when we go up in Algonquin Park, mm-hmm. up in Ontario, there was the whole studies about, you know, well, back in the day they used to shoot every wolf. They get so much money for every pelt, so that was fair game, yeah. right? But then they wanted to do studies, and they said, we're only going to do the studies if you stop shooting the wolves. And they started doing the studies between the wolf, the deer, the moose, and the balance and all that sort of stuff. Now, are you finding, I guess, over the time, the ebbs and flows of the moose and wolf population?
We are, and it doesn't always happen in maybe predictable ways that we might think in terms of a balance of nature,
right.
where you've got, you know, moose population goes up, wolves follow, moose goes down, wolves go down. Those are things that we have to be careful with, because there often are unpredictable things that play into that and change that thought process of where something is going to be. Okay, I can predict that the wolf population is going to go up here, and you can't do that.
Right.
You know as well as I do from, you know, where you live, that the warming of the climate actually has had an impact on what's happening in the study. We see that through the research. We see that, like, back in the 60s, 70s, typically in a decade, you'd have an ice bridge that would be formed from the mainland, roughly in this case Thunder Bay towards the island,
right.
15, 18 miles, that would be frozen. So you create a bridge. Animals can come and go. We get immigration of new animals. Well, now it's like once a decade, twice a decade. So that impacts the ability of, in the case of the wolves, to get immigration of wolves to the island, which is right. important. What we're finding is that there's so much inbreeding with the wolves, and the inbreeding can cause less production or reproduction for wolves.
Okay.
So that's kind of some of the little nuances that we've been finding through the study.
And you guys won't go and, like, live trap a bunch of wolves and import them yourselves to the island?
Well, to give you an idea, the population dropped to two animals back in 2017-18.
Wow.
The National Park Service in the States decided that they were going to reintroduce wolves to the island. Well, Ontario played a part in that.
Right.
There were 18 or 19, well, 19 wolves that were brought to the island over a period of about a year and a half, 2 years. And those wolves have resurged the population. They've increased now. And they've helped to bring kind of, I used balance of nature earlier, they kind of have brought things back into balance a little bit. But we don't know what the next decade is going to show either.
Right.
So that's kind of, you know, it was important that we did that, because we're trying to also, I'm sure the Park Service is looking at trying to maintain the resource so that people can enjoy it and they can still spend that time being in an environment where wolves and moose interact.
Right. I mean, that's definitely a draw.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, the chance of seeing a moose or a wolf.
Right.
You know, that's always a draw. You know, we're going to go there because there are. There's a good chance on that island that you're going to see, you know, as opposed to, why are we going to the island? There's nothing there.
Right, yeah.
Well, yeah, but there's birds.
That's right.
There's something like that, right? Everybody wants the big animal.
Exactly.
Like I said, there's the big three, the bear, the wolf, and the moose.
There
right?
you go.
Yeah. So if you got that chance that, you know, even if it's like winning the lottery kind of chance of seeing that interaction or something like that, you know, there's going to be the draw for
exactly,
it.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
So now, when you found when you dropped down to two wolves,
yeah.
did you find the moose population just shot up drastically, or was it a little bit?
Well, and again, there's other things that are kind of at play here, but yes, it did start to go up. We also have to look at, and I'll throw a kind of a phrase at the people here. It's a tropic cascade is a term or phrase I would use. And what that means is that it's not only the dynamics between a wolf and a moose, it's also the food or vegetation that is part of that mix.
Okay.
So if the vegetation is affected, that can affect the moose, and if it affects the moose, it's going to affect the wolves. So there's these other things that are kind of worked into this kind of equation, I guess,
right,
when you look at that. So
it's just not about the wolf and the moose.
Yeah, no, there's other things involved.
Okay.
And so when they did bring the wolves to the island over, now that's been like about 5 years now, the wolves did increase.
Okay.
They impacted the moose population, brought it back into more of a balance that we would maybe be thinking that we'd like to get to. And so far, so good. Keep our fingers crossed and see what the next 5 or 10 years tells us.
Yeah.
So.
Now, did they form one pack, or have they split?
Like, well,
I'm not sure how they were all introduced.
You know, that's a good question. At this point, I can't give your listeners for sure how many packs there are. My guess is it's probably at least two.
Okay.
Because we've got about 30 wolves on the island.
Right.
And, you know, it might even be three, but typically you're going to have probably 8 or 10 or maybe a little more in a pack. And they, of course, they, as you know, your listeners know, they work together and how catching food. So, but at this point, that's kind of where we're at for what we know. And like I said, the research is going to help us learn even more about, you know, down the road, how these wolves will continue to increase, or maybe they're going to go down a little bit. We don't know. Because,
right,
again, one of the key things about Isle Royale is isolation from the mainland. And give you a good example is that there are roughly about 30 species of mammals on the mainland that are not on Isle Royale. And the lake, the distance, prevents that from happening. And then I go back to my other statement about ice bridges.
Yep.
They can't travel. So,
right,
so Isle Royale becomes very isolated. Good and bad. I mean, there's a good and bad, you know, when I say that. But it does create an environment where we can look at these animals without a lot of other interference from other mammals that might interplay.
So it's a bit more of a controlled environment.
It kind of, might be one way to look at it. And it's a very, well, and I'm going to say this carefully. When I use the word simple, that's kind of with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
But when people would use, like, a simple one predator, one prey, that's basically what we're seeing in our royal.
Right.
Kind of in a nutshell. But you compare that, like, in our country, Yellowstone National Park.
Mm-hmm.
Grizzly bear, wolves, cougars are predators.
Right.
And then the prey, elk, bison, deer. So there's more dynamics in that system,
right,
and we'd call it more complex. So Isle Royale, even though I'm going to, you know, I use simple, maybe not quite so simple, but a bit simple compared to other things.
You got two people to look at.
Yeah.
The wolves to look at, the moose to look at. You don't have, like you say,
and
the cougars and everything like that, right?
So you're spot on. It's you just have this kind of one way of kind of looking at things without too much other interference.
Yeah. But, so, I mean, that kind of thing will also help. The stuff you learn from the studies can help other places.
Well, and right? Exactly. And you key point here is that the more we study them, the more we learn about, well, certain disorders they have. Arthritis is a big one. Periodontal disease is another one. That factors into learning about us as human beings. We can learn, there's a lot of similarities there. So if we can learn about how arthritis forms on a moose, and it might have something to do with nutrition, you can extrapolate that right into a human situation, and you can say, okay, if humans aren't getting good nutrition when they're really young, that can also mean that maybe by the time they get older, they're more susceptible to, like, arthritis or something like that.
Right.
So it does help us, too.
Good.
Yeah.
What about ticks? Are ticks a big thing there? Because I know that, when we go on our trip, we see the moose and Algonquin and stuff like that. They're covered.
Yeah, great park. I paddled there years ago. I love Algonquin Park. The winter tick is a tick that is quite prevalent on the island.
Okay.
And the thing about that is it impacts the wolves. It's not unheard of to have thousands of ticks on one wolf. And that causes them to scratch and kind of try to bite, you know, try to get irritation.
Right.
Well, they lose their fur. It opens up almost right to the skin. And then they're more susceptible going into winter. It's a little harder for them to get through winter because they have all this damage already on their pelt.
Right.
So that's an important factor. You have to think about that.
Yeah, I mean, we think about the moose getting all the ticks, but you never really think about the wolves and that getting that many ticks.
Yeah, and I don't know, just how many they actually get. That's, I mean, a good question. I don't have an answer for it. I'm not going to tell your listeners anything else, but it really has a quite a devastating effect on the moose. So, I mean, I've seen pictures where they're coming out of winter, and it's almost like a half of their body is just exposed. No hair on their body.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
that's a shame.
Yeah.
You know, on the other hand, that's nature.
You got it right there. Yeah.
I mean, if you guys are starting to step in to get rid of the natural occurrences, then that's going to damage your study.
Yeah, and you are absolutely correct in that. And we just, you know, nature kind of has its ways to do things. And there are times when maybe you do step in. Other times you just kind of leave it alone.
Yeah.
So
when people are going over there doing their hikes and doing their paddles and stuff like that, what are their chances of seeing? Like, is there a... I know everybody wants to see and...
Yeah. I guess... Or do they do
more hiding away from the main sections?
A good question. I mean, I've been there doing... And this is... Part of it is this research that we do part of the foundation. And I've been doing this research for about 18 years now.
Right.
I know certain places you'll go where you'll have a better chance of seeing things.
Right.
And, you know, even, I'm sure, certain, you run that into Algonquin, you maybe know there's a certain lake, and if you go there in the evening or, you know, that time of year or time of day, you might have a better chance of seeing the moose move into the water, because which they like, and it cools them down, and they, particularly in the summertime, they're really going to be in the water. They love the aquatic plants, it's rich in protein, and they're there. So shorelines. So, you know, just much like you would do, we'd do the same.
Right.
You go to those lakes, you know where those places are. Or kind of an interesting place is some of these mineral licks that you occasionally find on the island, and they're there. And if you know where they are, you can go and kind of camp out there, and the moose will come into those and do their licking and things and eating around it, because it's rich in minerals, too much they need. So, yeah, it's hard to give you a percentage. All the years I've been going... I've seen moose 4 times, and I've had them come in pretty close sometimes, within, you know, like in a campground checking us out. But this is early in the season when some of the first people are getting onto the island. The park service has opened the island for, and then not a lot of people around. And I think there's a curiosity there when they do that.
And they're, these things are back again this year. Must be camping season.
Yeah, those two-legged creatures. Get them out of here, you know. So
I mean, everybody wants to see.
Yeah.
Right? That's the way.
You know, and again, some of the busier parts of the island where people are coming and going, boats are coming in, there often is a good chance to see, particularly moose, because sometimes they use that maybe as a place to be a little safer, because there's humans there, wolves maybe aren't coming in, but the moose kind of learn that kind of behavior.
Yeah.
So I've seen that. I've seen them walking right through, right next to a concession area at Rock Harbor is one of the entry points. Just walk right down between the people down the sidewalk.
Okay.
Because, you know, it seems okay. But, again, that was some years ago. I know how things are. I've never witnessed that.
You gotta think they learn, though.
Yeah. So
now, when you get all the people coming, like you say, we were saying there that, you know, you don't want to step in because nature does what nature does. But now, all of a sudden, you got the people coming in sort of affecting how they act.
Yes, I would say that. And they'll depends on the time of year, but there would be an impact that way. You know, again, the wolves and moose probably, they begin to know that. They know where they're going to stay away from areas. And I just, as in a case in point, I don't know how many visitors Algonquin gets. Of course, Algonquin's a much bigger, much bigger park. But we're talking about on the main line of the main island of Isle Royale, and there's lots of little islands
little
that make
ones.
Up the archipelago, you know.
Yeah.
About 210 square miles. That's, you know, for the size, that's not huge, but the wolves and moose know where to go. They're getting off trail.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the thing that I'm involved in over the last 18 years, I rarely step on a trail. When I get to the island, I'm doing the research. First thing we're doing is stepping off trail, and we're off trail for 8 days back in the backcountry, which again has allowed us to see moose maybe a little more, because we're more in their place a little differently.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's
But you don't want the people that are coming to visit be doing that.
No, I mean,
you want them sticking to the trail. You
know, pretty much sticking to the trail. And again, the National Park Service, and we're not, you know, connected to them in that respect. They can kind of control that to some degree. As I mentioned earlier, how many people come to Algonquin in a typical year at IRL? We'll see maybe 20,000 people the whole season. So that could be, I mean, I don't know, Algonquin, that might be a couple of days.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, whatever. Yeah,
yeah.
So it's a little different there. It tends to have this more remote feeling to it.
Right.
And there's enough where people, there's enough of the island to spread the people out.
Right, yeah. Right. Now, out of everything since you started, you say 18 years ago, going and doing this, is there anything that's really surprised you in your findings between the moose and the wolf and the ecosystem on a whole that is happening there?
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to go back, and I mentioned the term inbreeding, and then if there's enough, that usually occurs in small populations. Whether, again, we talked about wolves being able to cross over to the island, new ones. Every time a wolf would cross to the island, and it's happened over the last 60 years, that kind of rejuvenates the genetic makeup of the wolves, and it causes them to maybe rebound. They actually go up in numbers.
Right.
But if that doesn't happen, then we get something, again, I'll throw a technical term at you, it's inbreeding depression, and what that means is that the genetics, there aren't enough genes in the pool, so to speak, to effectively maybe protect the wolves over a longer period of time. They then see things happening physically to their bodies.
Right.
And we've had basically mutations that can kind of cause, or we've seen in the wolves, where it affects maybe the vertebra. And then when that happens, that can have an effect on how the wolves hunt. It may affect their ability to take down a moose. So those things have been seen. They've been, you know, the research has shown that. It's been quantified. So I would say that. And then just physically looking at the environment. I can go there in certain places I've been where the Zik, a certain campground, was wide open. A lot of places to camp and everything. 20 years later, a succession has happened. It's growing into those areas. So you'll see that kind of thing. And then again, I kind of harp on the weather and climate, the changes in that are causing changes within the forest on the island.
Right.
So, yeah, you can see those kinds of things when you look at it from, like you indicated, a 20-year period or longer. In a human time, yes, you can actually see those little changes that are taking place.
Right.
Yeah.
So that sounds pretty cool. I mean, you're being able to watch this as it progresses and, you know, let it take its course, but, you know, try to control human involvement and... Because there is only so much that you can control when it comes to nature and how things go. What's going to happen is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
It sounds awesome being out there. Like I said, I know a few people that have been there, and they say, we're paddling around.
Yeah.
You know, we saw a moose, hoping to see a wolf. We never saw a wolf. Whatever. You know they're there, though.
Yeah.
You know.
But ultimately, it's their experience. Just in... enjoying themselves in that kind of an environment.
Well, and the how many times have you been sitting there and all of a sudden the wolves start howling? So you know they're there. Right?
Yes, and that's happened. Probably more often when I said not seeing them, you can often hear them.
Often. Yeah. And to me, that's just as much as you want to see them, but just to be sitting there and then all of a sudden the howling starts.
Yeah.
Do you ever howl back?
I've not done moose. I've howled back with great horned owls before and have come in, but not moose. No.
But the wolves, we sometimes we'll do the, we'll hear them and we'll start howling back and
you know
and
you
the answer.
Yeah, I remember that years ago at visiting the park, your Algonquin, and them having the wolf howls.
The wolf howls, they still have them.
Yeah, well, good.
Yeah, great. It's pretty cool though. You go out and they actually answer the guy howling. And then you hear that, and I've even been on canoe trips where you'll just hear, and you know it's not somebody because there's nobody else on the lake, right? Because you just know there's probably somebody over there howling. Yeah. But we'll sit there, and we know we're the only ones on a lake, and start howling. And once every couple of years, something howls back.
Yeah,
and you're just like, that is cool.
Oh yeah,
you know. So, Well, it sounds like you guys are doing an awesome job over there. If people want to find out more.
Yes. If you wanted to, I'll give you a couple sites to check. They actually both, they send you to the foundation. It's the Wolf Moose Foundation. Pretty easy to bring you right to it. Another one is IsleRoyalWolf.org. That one will take you to a foundation site, but it takes you to a site that, hey, if you want to volunteer, come on out. This takes you there. Press a volunteer button. We want you to, we can come out and do an expedition with us and learn more.
Now you're going to get way too many people.
Oh, wow, we want it.
Bring a wolf with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Adopt a wolf program.
There you go. Well, we'd love to have more people out there doing that kind of work. And
you know, these days we need it, right?
You betcha.
You know, we're, everything just keeps growing and growing and growing. And, you know, like I say, with the weather, you know, whether it's climate change or just the natural way to go, we got to keep the nature out there and keep it sustained, and whatever kind of experiments or watching that we can do to see how it all goes, the better, more knowledge we have.
You are right. You are right.
Awesome. Well, Michael, thank you very much for joining us here.
And thank you, guys.
Hopefully everything keeps looking great your way.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Okay. Like I say, it's pretty cool to hear all the research that they're doing on that island, and
it is
eye-opening, a couple of thingies that he was talking
about.
Now,
unfortunately, I wasn't down at QAS for this interview, but just from what we're talking about, it sounds very interesting. And it's the main issue, I think, would be the genetic diversity.
Yeah.
And so, like, this is, I'm going to have to listen to this episode.
You're definitely going to have to listen to this one.
So I missed the interview. I wasn't there.
I was.
Yes, and you told me a lot about it, but
yeah, from what I was explaining to you, yes, about what I talked, what we talked, yeah, about, you can hear those that just listened to the interview. It was pretty cool. Like I say, they've been researching this for ages, so some pretty interesting things that they have found out. So after Michael George, I then had Mike Stout come over from the Michigan. Dun, dun, dun. Michigan Waterways Stewards.
Okay.
And I've been talking a lot about lately about, actually, part of my presentation at the Toronto Outdoor Adventure Show and the Quiet Adventure Symposium was about waterway stewardship and why we should all take part in it. So when I was talking to Cynthia, she knows what my talk was about. She says, "Have you met Mike Stout?" And he's with Michigan Waterways Stewards. And I said, "No." And she went down and introduced me. He came on over and we sat down and we talked about what they're doing in Michigan to keep the waters clean, getting people organized, all that sort of stuff. So here is my little chat with Mike Stout. Our next guest is Mike Stout from Michigan Waterway Stewards. How you doing, Mike?
Hey, I'm doing fine. How are you?
Not too shabs. Thank you for joining us here.
Thank you.
So, Michigan Whitewater, I always say Whitewater, Michigan Waterway Stewards. Who are you guys? What do you do?
Who are we? We are now Michigan's largest waterway stewardship organization.
Okay.
We're a volunteer-based organization, nonprofit. We began 2 years ago when I moved here from the Twin Cities, and our need here is to clean our rivers and creeks of litter and trash and other evidence of urban living.
Which there's plenty of.
Plenty of. And since we've been here, we have mobilized over 2,700 volunteers over 12 communities.
In 2 years?
In 2 years.
Wow.
We have removed nearly 150,000 pounds of litter and trash and other urban debris.
That's
cleared 62 river-wide obstructions. It's just been an amazing journey because of the generous community support that we have here all across mid-Michigan.
Right. There's one of the things we've been talking about lately is cleaning our rivers and getting people involved and, you know, the waterway stewardship and stuff. And people take pride in their rivers once they have a hand in cleaning it, right?
Exactly, yeah.
You've got to get those people out there. You got to get them cleaning. I guess when you started, it was a bit harder to begin with. But now that you're doing it, how easy is it to get people out there and do the cleaning?
You know, you're exactly right. Initially, they had no idea who I am.
Right.
the need was so huge. It was Herculean effort. That's why it had been neglected for so long, because it was such a huge need, right? It was
right.
Like overwhelming. But it's like climbing a mountain. You got to take one step at a time and just keep at it, and all of a sudden you'll be halfway there, and all of a sudden you'll be at the top and go, look at this. And what we've seen here is that it's the word of mouth. It's the organic growth, the feedback. People are excited to be a part of it, and we really appreciate and value our volunteers. We have a lot of fun, and make it a community-wide event, more of a community celebration than work.
Right.
And you see, you know, I feel the same way, but our volunteers do too. They look back after they've done a half day's work, 2 hours, and they see the difference, the impact that they've created. They feel the sense of pride, and you see the high fives, and they want to come back and do it again. It was such a great, great experience.
Now, is this something you do just like once a year, or are there different rivers, different events all summer long sort of thing?
We do this year-round, as long as we have you know, access
soft
to
water.
The water, soft water. This year's been a little bit cold.
Yeah.
Some ice cover. But last year, we were doing it in January and February. And now that the ice is off the water and the snow's off the ground, we already began, as of last week, some stewardship events.
Awesome. That's perfect. Now, when you guys are cleaning, are you finding certain, I guess, I would think that the rivers closer to towns and cities are worse. Is there some, like, one particular form of trash or water pollution that you're finding?
It's just the evidence of urban living, right? The paper, the glasses, the plastics, then you find the MSU police barricades and the highway barrels, and you find the electric scooters and the bicycles, refrigerators. It's just it's a sampling of urban living.
I heard that one place, I know the people doing magnet fishing, were finding a lot of the scooters.
Yeah, we have retrieved nearly 500 electric scooters and bicycles.
Seriously?
The epicenter was right here, unfortunately, on campus at Michigan State, East Lansing, on the Bogue Street Bridge. And we've gotten past that. I think we've gotten most of them out. There's always something, I'm sure, underwater that we haven't seen.
Right.
So we've come a long ways. That began 2 years ago.
And now 500. Wow. So what are the methods people are using to clean? Is it, I mean, I'm walking the river, out in canoes and kayaks?
Well, we do it on the water, along river's edge. You know, our area focus is also the riverside trails, the riverside parks,
okay. The
river itself. So think of the entire riparian zone.
Okay.
Because the need is that we'll see that the litter trash is coming from the parking lots, and it could be, you know, the ugliness of urban living. You have the homeless encampments,
yep.
And you have some sloppy fishermen, just people that are careless.
Right.
So we're focusing on the entire area. You know, what we're seeing is that when you see the area that's gotten clean, people take a pride in it. You see less litter. On the other hand, litter attracts litter. People see it sloppy. People are indifferent, and it just feeds that those bad practices.
Yeah, and I mean, people—if you're talking doing the trails, you throw something on the waterside trail. Well, wind. Next thing you know, that's in. Are you finding? Or do you guys pay attention to how much wildlife is being affected by all the trash or anything like that? Like, I know we carry knives in our PFD so that we can cut fishing line and stuff out of the trees.
Yeah.
Right? That sort of thing.
Well, we don't have any direct evidence, but obviously we know that the litter and trash, the small microplastics, fish can't tell if it's something to eat or whatever.
Right.
They're fooled. And then the unhealthy habitat doesn't attract migratory waterfowl. So what we're doing this year, you know, work with different cities. We're creating some protected natural areas for migratory fowl and also for some bedding areas for deer to clear the stuff out of litter and trash, putting up signs. So we're seeing this whole thing really take hold in a number of different areas.
And a lot of education, public education.
You know, there are three parts to our program. We have stewardship,
right,
education, and advocacy. And a big part of it is education. And the education is really where the long-term win is. If people understand the downside, the dangers of litter and trash and being sloppy.
Right.
being gained, get their attention at an early age, or perhaps at that age where they're typically violators. Could be early teens, young adult years, where they're indifferent.
Yeah, got that bag of chips in the pop and just on the ground.
Hey, you know, we get it, but no, it's we take an entire approach to it, comprehensive right. approach.
Do you do like so? You guys do education for the young kids and stuff like that. Do you do it in schools, or is it all online?
Well, we do it in school. We partner with Potter Park Zoo. We have a big event in June in our capital city, partnering with Potter Park Zoo. And we'll have probably 15 to 20 environmental conservation groups.
Okay.
It's about educating the community about just stewardship, maybe water treatment or natural habitat, fish, wildlife, conservation.
Right. Because, yeah. I mean, coming from the Toronto area, everybody's, you know, it's all about the city. And they're not really paying attention to the waterways that run through that city, or, you know, like Lake Ontario, Lakeshore, that sort of stuff, or just outside. And there's all the conservation groups. And I know there's a mentality of, well, the conservation groups are out there. They're dealing with that. And but they've only got so much money. So it only behooves the public to get involved and volunteer their time. How important is that here with what you guys are doing, that the volunteers come out?
It's all about the volunteers. You know, it's the old phrase, many hands or many hands make light work.
Right.
And through the power of having hundreds of volunteers in the event, we can create that large impact that otherwise wouldn't be possible.
Right.
By having a large base of volunteers and the enthusiastic support of cities and townships, civil and social groups, we can get a lot more done than perhaps a passionate group of six or eight. They can only impact a small area. And what happens is that it takes so much time to impact a large area.
Right.
And
you need those extra people.
Yeah.
Definitely do.
So by mobilizing hundreds of people at a time, we can create a large impact over, in some cases, miles of river and trails on a single day.
Right. That's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool.
And people don't have to wait for some sort of cleanup day. You know, like when we go paddling, we always, you know, if we see something, we put it in our boat.
Yeah.
You know, like, I know there's a cleanup coming, you know, they're getting putting a cleanup day together in 3 weeks. We'll just have to remember that's there. No, pick it up now.
Exactly. Good point. It's a part of our everyday.
Yeah.
You know, we're truly stewards of our environment, our waterways. And here in Michigan, we're blessed with 21% of the world's fresh water.
Right.
You know, if you were born here or you've come here through work, it's something incumbent upon us to be stewards of this amazing water, this natural asset that we have that no one else has in the United States or perhaps anywhere in the world. We're
right.
truly blessed.
You got it. It's keep it the way, you know, keep it, and you can only, as we say, leave it better.
Yeah.
You know, so, and yeah, so this is the education stuff. Now, advocacy, you say, is that like at government levels or just out there to people?
No, what happens is that a lot of people know that there's a need or there's a problem area.
Right.
And they may not know how to address it, how to approach it, or they may be fearful because it could be their employer.
Right.
So they look for us to help them, to guide them, and sometimes a new perspective, that's all that's needed. And we've been brought on board a number of times to help. And we've had huge success rate.
Good.
But here's what happens, is that whenever you approach someone for the first time, no matter how gentle and kind, their first response is, nope, not us. It's a natural defense mechanism, right?
Right.
But we find that once we're made aware, and they know what's going on, that they could do better, that you come back in a matter of a week or 2 weeks, the area's been totally clean and cleared. And
right.
So sometimes you just have to be a little bit bold and
make that. Now, I know, like, even still, like, some people may not know what's going on, and it gets brought to their attention as well, which maybe needs to be. I know with the company I work with, there's a safe bio thing we put down our sewer, which they said, nope, that's perfectly safe. But then we're finding out our cleaners were dumping something down.
Yeah.
And their bleach mixed with our bio, I can't remember the word, safe thing, combined to make chloroform. So all of a sudden we're dumping chloroform down, and we didn't know it. So it's brought to our attention, and we take the appropriate, and then everything now comes out clean. Which is nice to, you know, if it's something simple like that. But yeah, if they know what's going on, that's something totally different.
Well, we had a problem. We had a large fish kill near the Tecumseh Park area this last summer.
Okay.
And it was during a time that we had very low waters. The ponds were very shallow. And then we had this contaminant. And because the water was so vulnerable, it just killed all the fish in the pond.
Right.
And we found out the source was basically upriver, of course. And it was simply due to some careless mixture of solution that made its way into the river. And even though it may have been a minute amount of pollutant, it was catastrophic.
It made that, it just made that difference, just that tiny amount.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and we got to keep as much as we can out, you know. I mean, there's some, you know, back in the day, you used to get the rivers burning, you know, that sort of thing. And I mean, even overseas, you see these pictures of all the trash. Well, once the rains come, wash it down, it's not our problem anymore.
Yeah, you know, we've come a long way since the industrial age in the 20s and 30s, or perhaps the, say, 50s, and the capital city was booming with the automobile industry. But we still have a ways to go.
Yes. And yeah, as long as there's garbage, it's going to find its way into the rivers and trails. And
you know, this year we're looking at doing something a little bit different, too, is that we're really good at the last step, the measure of, you know, well, cleaning up rivers is the last resort.
Okay.
We want to get further upstream, literally and figuratively, and create this protected eco zone to avoid having the pollution getting its way near the rivers.
Right.
And that's going to require some legislative changes that we're pushing this summer, season. And once that's in place, then all of a sudden now we're managing our natural waterways so much better.
And that's the end goal, is to make sure everything's nice and clean. And
that's through the education, the sense of ownership. It begins with the local businesses, or it could be a high-density urban building. It could be a number of factors, but it's something we can do very easily.
Right.
Against another new perspective. We've already gotten really strong interest within the city.
Good.
The cities, that is, across the capital city region.
Well, see, and that's a big thing, is getting the local city and stuff involved, is because if they want to just put their hands up and go, no, we got other things to do. But if they're going to, okay, well, let's take a look at this.
You know what? We have been truly blessed with really strong city support, be it from Williamston to Meridian Township, East Lansing, Lansing, Kalamazoo, Marshall, Jackson. So we're seeing, in my opinion, a true shift in the sense of ownership.
Good.
I think what's happening, they see the Herculean efforts that's being done by the volunteers, by the community, the whole community spirit's lifted.
Right.
They want to be a part of it. So take advantage of this momentum.
Yeah.
And do something really big. And it's not that difficult sometimes. Just sometimes people need that permission to act.
And once you start.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
So if people want to find out more about what you guys are doing, where do they look?
They go online and go to Michigan Waterway Stewards. It's www.miwaterwaysstewards.org. Drop a note. Give us a call. We'd love to talk to you.
And they can either volunteer, or if they see something that's just not right, they can send you a note as well?
You know, they can volunteer, drop us a note. There's the need that they want help to address it, whatever it takes. If they want to create an event for their community, we can do that within a week or two in many cases.
Perfect.
It's a huge event. It takes a little bit more time and planning, but we try to eliminate every barrier to waterway stewardship. That's really our mission.
Perfect. You can help out, and if people can help. Again, it takes a village, right?
It takes a village, right.
Awesome. Mike, thank you very much for joining us today.
Hey, thank you. Really appreciate it.
Enjoy the rest of the show.
All right, you too.
That was Mike Stout from the Michigan Waterway Stewards. It was nice chit-chat with him because, like I say, a lot of the stuff I've been talking about lately has been waterway stewardship and stuff. And the fact that their goals are stewardship, education, and advocacy is pretty neat. And the amount of people that they've managed to, in 2 years, get out there is astounding. So continued success, hopefully, to them and all their goals. Pretty cool. So that was the first few people I chit-chatted with there. Yeah.
So, yeah, so what, with you, you did enough interviews, which is amazing that we are going to get 3 episodes out of this.
Yeah.
So this is the finish of episode 1 of QAS.
Episode 1 of 3. Dun, dun, dun.
And so just a thing on the for Michigan, it's I can see why they'd have a lot of interest in water advocacy because they touch 3 lakes.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they've got a lot of water coverage.
Yeah, and especially so, the urban areas, they really take trying to get protected because I mean that's where the litter is, and as they say, litter begets litter.
Yep, exactly. Right? And especially such a large lake like Lake Michigan, Lake Huron, and Lake Erie, that's a lot of water coverage. That's a lot of shoreline.
Yep.
So it's going to be something that you need to get on top of if you want to maintain your waterways, your shorelines, and so on.
Yeah. So, all righty. You got anything to add before we close this one out?
I do not.
Well, again,
I just added. I just did my ad.
You just did your ad. Again, it's a shame that you weren't there.
Yes, unfortunately.
But life jumps in the way sometimes, so yep. Next year for sure.
Next year for sure.
I'd say you're buying the beer next year, but apparently I bought your beer last year.
I'll buy the
it's
next
still
one.
Still sitting there.
I'll buy the second one.
You can buy the next one, yeah. You're just going to hand me a piece of paper. Here, let me buy you a beer.
Exactly.
You cheapie. Alrighty, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream all our episodes at iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at Paddling Adventures Radio and stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody that came up to the booth and said hello while I was down in Michigan. It was awesome to see everybody, and the support we get from our listeners is awesome.
And I'll do my best to be there next year.
Yeah, goddamn right. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.